Okay, welcome back. Hour number three. Wasn't that excellent? Really good. Stefan Verstappen is a remarkable storyteller. The truth. Just right there glaring at you. Okay, this hour, Dr. Henry Nyman is back. There is a lot of craziness out there. We're going to talk about some of it. And the headlines in the coronavirus section. Apparently, let me see if I can find this. Hold on just a second here. A1. No, that's not it. Here it is. The average number, and Henry's been forecasting this. The average number of daily coronavirus cases is slowing in some areas now. This is a seasonal issue as much as anything. We'll talk more about that later as well. Coronavirus kills 8, infects over 350 at a California poultry plant, which has now been told to shut down. I go back again to the broken links in the food chain. Don't forget about that. Mississippi coroner says state's coronavirus death tally is misleading. This is the Mississippi state coroner, causing unnecessary fear in the public. It's a Newsweek story. I haven't been able to read it yet. I'll go over and take a look at that later. The Sturgis biker rally. Now the tally is out of 500,000 bikers, they're claiming about 70 purported cases found so far. So that's interesting. We also haven't had much in terms of cases reported amongst the protesters. Huh? It's weird. Hawaii's coronavirus outbreak is spiraling out of control now as the government has revived the lockdown policy there. California's Governor Newsom reveals strict new coronavirus reopening guidelines. Lab confirms first case of coronavirus reinfection in the U.S. I kind of don't think so. I think we've had reinfections before, but that's the headline. Okay, let's jump right into it. Henry, how goes it? Were you boots on the grounding it today, or you've been kicking around the house most of the day?
No, actually, speaking of boots on the ground, I do have a boots on the ground report from yesterday. And this, again, is the local high school here in Fox Chapel. And I did notice that they are actually conducting several of the classes outside. So the class size is pretty small. I saw three of them outside yesterday, and they ranged in size from 10 to 15 students in each of the classes. And they all had masks, and they were outside, and they were pretty well spaced apart. And other schools have cited this, that, you know, it would be safer if they held the class outside. And so that was happening.
Well, assume it's not raining yet.
Well, it was raining today. I don't think they were outside today. That's right. It was yesterday's report. So yesterday it was sunny, and early in the morning, like the first class, I saw three of them outside. It could have been more, but I saw three. And like I say, I mean, one was out on the track. The other ones were out near the other fields. So they were, you know, outside, out of the way of any pedestrian or even vehicle traffic.
Well, Henry, I want you to know this.
And they were conducting those classes.
I want you to know this. If you get arrested for lurking around the high school outside the fence, we'll set up a GoFundMe account for you.
Inside the fence. The high school's pretty open. They really don't have. They do have a fence around the track and the stadium because they sell tickets and stuff, and they can lock it. But the gates are open, and You can come. I mean, actually, the only time security did approach me was at about 4 in the morning when I was doing bleachers, going up and down the bleachers, and when they did hit one
in
guy.
In the dark? You were running bleachers at 4 a.m.?
Well, it was 4 a.m., but they actually, since they did the repaving and everything, they haven't turned it back on, but they used to have lights on at the stadium. Those lights did give you enough light, so you could go up and down the bleachers and see the bleachers pretty clearly, and you could see the track. And and it's always been, it's still open, but they for some reason they haven't turned the lights on that they used to have on all night. And so it is a little trickier if you go below before daybreak.
So they saw your flashlight going up and down, and that was the giveaway.
Well, no, that's why I say. This happened about a year ago or so, and this was, and they had the lights then, so you didn't need a flashlight. The lights really lit up the whole track area and the bleachers, and it wasn't a problem. And but they did run into a problem because you know the school's basically been closed, and they turned a lot of things off, including the water. So you know there's a water fountain by the stadium, and they've had that water off for I don't know, you know, 4 or 6 months or so. And as a result, when they turned the water back on, they ran tests, and they've got Legionella in four out of the six campuses. So only bottled water now for the school. And
they got to flush the system.
It won't be a problem. They're not, inside or outside, they're not going to be holding classes that much longer. But they are still there. I actually counted the buses. They didn't have as many buses, so it looks like they've done some combinations on the bus routes so that they don't send out as many buses because they don't have that many students taking in class. And another update in the Pittsburgh area, both the Steelers and the Pitt Panthers from the University of Pittsburgh will be playing their initial games at empty stadium. So there's no fans at the pro or college football games. But I don't think
they're
going to
have
be pro or college
cheer.
Games,
are they going to have cheering tracks for the audio speakers?
I don't know. The season hasn't started. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to, you know.
How eerie would that be, huh?
Viewers experience. Yeah. Well, they kind of had that with hockey. They started hockey here. Unfortunately, the Penguins got eliminated in the first season, so they didn't really have that many games. And but I thought they had a crowd track on it when goals got scored or something. But they didn't have. You know, it was empty. You know, hockey rinks also that they were playing in front of. And I think that's kind of the situation in most of the sports. But it's not going to last. That's my prediction, and I think it's a pretty safe prediction. So that's the story there. As far as the cases are concerned, without going into a whole lot of detail, for the U.S. overall, the cases actually are going back up. So there may be some places that are going down, but today the number of cases was over 54,000. It had been in the mid-40,000, so there's about 10,000 more cases today than there were yesterday all week. I mean, the way the numbers typically come out is the numbers go down on the weekends, and so the reports from Saturday, Sunday, and Monday are generally lower because Saturday's lower because they don't all report on the weekends. Mondays are lower because they're really giving you Sunday results. And so other than the three weekends, the 4 weekdays all had at least 1,000 fatalities. So the deaths are above 1,000 again. And the prediction by the CDC that the deaths were going to go down this week did not come to pass. So I don't know if they're went to the prediction school of Donald J. Trump. And I mean, usually when you make predictions just a week out, you know, I thought that, they were predicting.
Good. Yeah.
Well, especially if you're talking about deaths, because the people that die are people that are already in the hospital. So I thought they did a deep dive on the data, and they saw that the number of cases that were on ventilators or in the ICUs were down last week, and therefore they had confidence predicting that that was going to translate into the deaths going down this week, but it didn't. So it's not clear what kind of analysis they're doing. You know, any good news will do, even if it's not true, and then maybe people will forget the next week.
Any good news will do, even if it's not true. It rhymes.
That's true. And that did come to pass today. If you recall, there was a big fiasco on the convalescent antibodies and the expanded use and the citing of the data of reduction of death of 35%, meaning that 35 out of 100 people would survive. And that was just pure fantasy. I mean, that was utter nonsense that the FDA came out and stated. The scientific community was up in arms because there are physicians that are treating cases and they're not seeing any miraculous recoveries. And, you know, the deaths that I just told you are actually going up. So there's nothing that's indicating that all of a sudden patients are surviving now when they didn't in the past. And there's been plenty of convalescent antibodies available for quite some time on a compassionate use basis. And so today the FDA announced the termination of two of its consultants, one of which was Emily Miller, who was appointed 11 days ago. So she lasted 11 days. She had no experience in the healthcare area. And apparently there were squabbles over, she was in charge of communications. Apparently she was in charge of miscommunications. There were internal wranglings over how the data was going to be presented. And apparently, flat-out lies don't work that well on scientific data when scientists know what the real data are. And so she's gone. And somebody else was dismissed today, and they said that was just a coincidence, 100% mm-hmm. coincidence. They were kind of reviewing people. And so two people at the FDA that were involved with them, I think they were both involved. Warren Pines was the other one. I'm not sure exactly what his position was, but so two people were terminated. And the FDA has fallen on hard times. They were roundly criticized by scientists throughout the U.S. and probably worldwide. And then the CDC nonsense about not testing asymptomatic contacts was roundly criticized. And they tried to walk that back. Redfield said it was his idea, and that, you know, well, if you really want to test, you probably should test. So there were, I think, at least half a dozen governors who flat out said that they were going to disregard CDC's recommendation because they're trying to control the virus. They know they have to do testing, contact tracing, and contact tracing includes asymptomatic. That's the whole idea, is to identify people before they develop symptoms, because the viral load is highest in 1 to 3 days before they develop symptoms. So the idea of not testing contact is just utter stupidity. It flies in the face of the known data, and Redfield should resign. I mean, I'm sure he'll get terminated if Trump isn't reelected. I mean, these guys are off the rails. You know, whatever Trump wants to hear, that's what they're going to put out. Oh yeah, yeah. There'll be some major revisions in who's generating, you know, this misinformation. And but as a warning that, you know, there's, 67 days to the election. So the misinformation campaign should be stepping up in high gear. And one example of that, I really don't follow this parallel universe that closely, but a couple examples have been called to my attention. And one of my, I did go over a week or two ago, and just as a refresher, that was I don't know who he is. I didn't look him up. He's got MD after his name. Uh-huh. I did look at his YouTube video, and his YouTube video, he did an analysis, you know, based on his analysis of the sequence data. That there wasn't real, because they weren't isolating the virus. They were simply generating sequences from samples. And so his statements in that YouTube video definitely disqualified him from making any intelligent commentary on sequences. He has no idea what he's talking about. And he's kind of pushing this idea that the virus doesn't exist. The SARS,
SARS-CoV-2 doesn't exist.
Right, doesn't exist. And when I gave that update after that came out, I had mentioned there were 82,000 sequences at GSAT, which largely came from clinical samples and. They all came from clinical samples, and although the majority of them were direct sequencing, where they didn't isolate the virus, because it's a lot quicker if they do it directly. They don't have to worry about selecting out a subset that'll grow well on whatever cell line they use. They can just go directly in and get a sequence. The technology is improved, so. They can take that approach quickly, and that's
so. Just to put it in straightforward English, there is no doubt whatsoever that there is a fully isolated, identifiable virus. Just want to make it real clear.
Thousands of times over, they have isolated the virus, and it's actually up to. I just double checked. There's over 92,000 sequences now. So there were 82,000 a week ago.
What the hell are these people doing, Henry? What did they say?
They are lying. How are they lying. They are pure. Here's what their argument is, because the second one came today. All and right. The second one, it was actually the same story. The same story is that scientists that are basically taking a clinical sample and generating a complete sequence that is over 99.9% identity with the original virus that was isolated in Wuhan in January.
It's a virus. It's a virus. Yeah.
Are somehow just pulling out sequences, and that doesn't prove that there's really a virus there, even though it matches 99.9% of the virus that has been isolated, and even though a certain percentage of the sequences. I mean, if you go to GSAT, there's a column, and the column says source. So the source has to do with where did that sequence come from? And the majority of them say clinical sample, meaning that they sequenced it directly from the sample. But a subset of them give the cell line that the virus was isolated from. So if they say viral cells, that means that they took the clinical sample, they grew a virus, so they were able to isolate the virus, and then they sequenced the isolated virus. If it just says clinical samples, that means they directly sequenced it. And just to get a little bit into the weeds as far as how this is done, that when they generate a sequence, the sequence is generated by PCR, and the PCR basically has primers that the investigator chooses. So these are little short pieces that would be specific for SARS coronavirus 2. And those little pieces, the primers, bind to the corresponding sequences in the sample. And then they add a polymerase that basically fills in the space between those primers. So they put a primer like at position 1, let's say, and then they put another primer at position 250. And then the polymerase fills in the sequence between positions 1 and positions 250. And that sequence is filled in by using a template. And the template is what is in the clinical sample. So to get the sample that's 99.9% identical with the SARS-CoV-2 means that there is a template in that sample, not added by the investigator. It is there, and that is what generates the sequence that is actually generated when they do the sequencing, because that's what gets amplified. So they have a bunch of copies of that space between the primers, and they're able to sequence it because they've made many, many copies of it via PCR, and then they get all their little pieces. So they have primers that they run all along the length of the 30,000 bases. I mean, that's how big the sequence is. So a full sequence is 30,000 letters, and they get a bunch of short sequences. I think they're actually longer now. I think the technology has improved, so instead of being 250, I think they're closer to 600, so there's about 600 long, and you can kind of do the math how many you have to do to get 30,000. You got to do that about 60 times or so. And when you do that, you get these sequences, they overlap, you can string them together. You actually know what the sequence is supposed to be. You don't know if there's a mutation here and a mutation there, but you know that what the full sequence looks like. China released that back in January. So January, anybody in the world has got an internet connection and basically set up a account at GSAD, knows what the full sequence is. And that was made available January 11th. And all of the sequences that have been generated since then are like 99.9% identical with that original sequence in Wuhan. And to generate 92,000 sequences, it's not one lab that's generating that data. It's not one country that's generating that data. That's not like the U.S. is generating that. It's countries throughout the world. That one of the benefits of these outbreaks, which I've discussed for a couple of decades now, is that different labs around the world have been equipped so they can all do their own sequencing. I mean, back with SARS, when SARS happened 17 years ago, there were a limited number of labs that were capable of doing that. So most of the sequences that were generated 17 years ago were either generated by a couple labs in Hong Kong, there was a lab in Singapore, there was a national labs in Canada, Vietnam. I think they did their own sequencing. There was a lab in Vietnam. And so each of these countries that had an outbreak did their own sequencing. They went, they released the sequences at their website, and you could go around from each of these labs and get the latest sequences at the time. And subsequently, like for this year, GSAD got involved. GSAD was kind of established to do influenza sequencing. And some of the sequencers that did the coronaviruses convinced them that they should do these coronavirus sequences because there was a pandemic. I mean, the scientists knew there was a pandemic before WHO declared a pandemic. Mm-hmm. They knew it was a pandemic long before Trump acknowledged there was a pandemic. They knew there was a pandemic when Trump was saying it's a hoax. They knew it wasn't a hoax. They knew how many patients were positive in Wuhan, in part because they knew how many cases were being exported to adjacent countries. So when they started showing up in Thailand and they started showing up in Japan, and they were all people that were coming from Wuhan, and they knew there were 19 million people in the Wuhan general area. So for them to get, random travelers to have the virus meant that there were tens of thousands of cases in Wuhan at the time. And you can't get that many people infected without human-to-human transmission. Not, you don't get 10,000 people go to the same seafood market. So they knew it was transmitting person to person. They knew that there were going to be a lot of sequences. And frankly, the number of sequences is quite astonishing. I mean, there literally are 92,500-something sequences at GSAD as of today. I mean, there'll be 100,000 sequences in a week. That's how many sequences are being generated every day. And all of these sequences are the same, essentially. I mean, they're 99%. They aren't discovering a new virus. The sequences are not the SARS-1 virus. They're not MERS. They're not other serotypes. They don't actually be serotypes. They're just based on phylogenetic. But they're all novel beta coronaviruses. And they're all 99.9% identical to the sequence that was released by China. So there is no doubt that this virus exists. And there's no doubt that it's in all of these countries where their local labs are taking clinical samples and they're able to pull out these sequences. And they're publishing full sequences. I mean, with influenza, a lot of times they'll pick one of the 18 segments and they'll do that whole segment or they'll do part of that segment. And because all you really need is about 20 nucleotides to know that you've got a real match. And if you want to push it, you could say 30. But, I was saying these primers are set up. So each time they do one of these amplifications, they get a sequence that's at least 200 nucleotides. And if you've got 200 nucleotides, you don't need all 30,000. If you've got 200 nucleotides and you go and you put that into GeneBank or GSAD and you search for the match, you'll get something that's close to 100% match. And all of those that are close to 100% match will be from the same virus. I mean, there's only four letters, but the four letters have to be in the right order. And you can't take the four positions and get 200 to match at 99% by random. You need the template, and you're picking up that virus. So the paper, it's not a paper, it's an argument that came out that I saw today, was another guy who was saying, well, this isn't real. To get it real, they've got to isolate the virus. They got to show it in an electron microscope. They got to take a picture of it, blah, 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 blah. And this guy is, you know, 40 years out of date. I used to do electron microscope pictures of viruses back in the 70s and back in the 80s. Sure. Now everything is done with sequencing. The sequence is zero doubt. When you've got 30,000 letters lined up and they all say, and they're all 99.9% identical to a sequence that is came from a virus, you know that the only way you can get a match of 30,000, and frankly, the only way you can get a match of 200, not 30,000, just 200 in a row, to get 200 letters in a row that match, means you've got the virus there. You don't get 200 letters in a row that randomly match. And these guys are trying to argue that you can. They're trying to say, well, you know, direct sequencing doesn't count, which disqualifies them from saying anything about sequencing because they don't know what they're talking about. They either don't know what they're talking about, or they're Russian bots, or they're imitating Russian bots designed to deceive. So they're putting this out. They're putting it out online for the general public to read, and they go and say, oh, they didn't isolate the virus. They just isolated the sequence. You know, we can discount that. That doesn't mean anything. And this latest guy gave it, his analogy was solving a murder and saying they found the gun, but they really didn't find the gun. They found something at a car, you know, a junkyard, and the junkyard dog discovered the pistol, and that's how they were able to tie that into the murder
scene. This is what you're describing analogy, is anti-science.
The analogy
again.
It's disguised as science. It's saying, oh, well, you know, this other guy who says he's an MD, you know, says he did his personal analysis, and based upon his analysis, all they've got is sequences, and that doesn't mean that there's a virus there. And that is utter nonsense because of the nature of the sequence. You're not just pulling something out, you're generating a sequence. To generate the sequence, the polymerase is filling in the space between your primers, and it needs a template to do that. And the template is the virus. They wouldn't get the sequence right without using a template. And the only place they're going to get a template that's 200 nucleotides long that matches the virus is from the virus. So they don't need to isolate the virus. They don't need to take a picture of the virus. They just need the sequence and compare the sequence to what's known. And when they get a 99.9% match, that's because the virus is in that clinical sample. And that's why it's a gold standard. I mean, that's why there's 92,000 sequences there, because the technology has evolved. So they don't need a lot of samples. They can get a full sequence. They can generate the full sequence in a matter of a couple of days. And they know all about that virus. They know that A is SARS-CoV-2, B, it matches 99.9%. C, they know exactly where it doesn't match. And B, they've got this huge database so they can see if this mutation is a new mutation or if it's an old mutation that's already been, it's already in the database. And they can see where the match is from and when it was isolated. And they literally have a database now of 92,000 sequences. Wow. And these guys are using their expertise, which is zero, uh-huh, to say, oh, you don't really know that that's from the virus. These are just pieces of genetic information that are slapped together. This junkyard dog finding a gun, and you say that it's connected to this murder. And when they find the sequence, it's just not a sequence. It's a sequence that's 99% identical to the sequence they're looking at for.
It's a virus, for God's sakes. 92,000 right, confirmations of it. Same thing.
Right. And from labs, from like 1,000 labs. These are labs worldwide. They're able to do their own sequencing now. So you can take a lab in Nigeria and generate a full sequence in a day or two because they've got the equipment, they've got the protocols, and all they need is the sample. And they've got samples. There's 6 million cases in the U.S. alone. Mm-hmm. There's like 25 million people that have been identified with a nasopharyngeal swab. So in that swab is the virus. And that virus sequence can be identified by labs worldwide. And that's how they have 92,000 sequences now. But the only reason I'm going over this is because the second example happened today. So that told me that, A, the explanation I gave a week ago or two of what this MD was doing on YouTube wasn't clear enough. So that when the people saw somebody else doing exactly the same thing, using the exact same argument, saying that sequences are not the virus, and just because they have a sequence doesn't mean the virus is in that sample. And that is absolutely false. The sequence means that it definitely isn't. I mean, the only way it could be that the virus isn't in the sample is if they somehow contaminated the sample. Yeah, so that would be the only way you do that. And
But even
if you contaminated the sample with a positive control, the sequence would match the positive control exactly. And that's not what people are reporting. If you do the sequence and your positive control is like the Wuhan sequence from January, and you got that today, you say, oh, there's something wrong here. Because the virus has evolved. All the sequences I've been getting are 99.9% identical. They're not 100%. Nobody's reporting the original Wuhan sequence in a patient today, because they've all evolved away from that. So they've got a few differences. And so they know it's not contamination by the positive control because it doesn't match the positive control. It matches, what's circulating in viruses that were collected at about the same time. So if you've got an August collection, it's not going to match a January connection because it's evolved away from that already, and it's going to have some differences. Not so many differences that you wouldn't recognize it. It's still 99.9%, but there's 30,000. I mean, you can have 10 differences and you're still 99.99% identical because you've got 30,000 identities and 10 differences. So and that's what these sequences are that are on deposit. They basically have 5, 10, 15, if they have 20 differences, that's a lot. But if they have 20 differences, they mean they have 30,000 matches. And you don't get 30,000 matches, you know, by accident. You get it from the virus that's in the sample, and it's as conclusive as you can get. And you don't you don't need to grow the virus, although some do. I mean, some do grow the virus because they want the virus there. If they want to do something later, if they want to use the virus for a vaccine, they isolate the virus. There is isolated viruses out there. There were viruses isolated back in January in Wuhan. They made a vaccine. You don't make a vaccine against sequences. You make the vaccine against the virus, so you do isolate the virus. You just don't have to keep on isolating the virus. The technology is there that you can go and do a direct sequence from the sample. You can assemble the full sequence of the virus, and the sequence that you generate that way is just the same. You know, there might be one or two differences depending upon selection, but it's essentially the same virus as if you isolate the virus. And if you isolate a virus from a clinical sample, depending upon what cell line you use to isolate it, you can influence what you select out of there, because you could have a mixture. And then if you grow it up, you're just going to have whatever grows best on that cell line, which might not represent the major species in the clinical sample. So there's significant advantages from doing direct sequencing, which can potentially give you a better result than isolating a virus, which is going to select the virus that grows the best in the cell line you're using. So, and anyway, in any event, the bottom line is that the sequences are definitely from the virus. There's 92,000 of them. This is the virus exists. It's all over the world. It's in thousands, tens of thousands of samples where they not only got a PCR positive, which PCR positive is just a little segment of a couple hundred nucleotides, and it's just a number initially, but they've actually sequenced the whole virus. They've got full sequences of 30,000 letters, which they published. And anybody with an internet account that wants to register in GSAT, it's free registration, can look at these 92,000 sequences and realize that it's real. It's been generated by, you know, thousands of researchers around the world, and they're not all done by the U.S., and they're not all done by Russia, and they're not all done by Brazil, and they're not all done by Germany. Each country does samples of patients they have, and they all have lots and lots of patients. So, in any event, but the reason I'm going over this is because this is the type of information that's out there. And these guys are just, the guys that are publishing this are either total fools or are designed to deceive. They're designed to cast
doubt.
That's
called created opposition. Yeah,
Right. That's what Russian bots do. They basically put out this information so that people can argue about it and say, oh, I saw this, I saw that, that's not real, oh no, yours isn't real, blah, 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 blah. And and any scientist isn't even going to get in the conversation because they're going to look at this, and if they know anything about sequences, if they know anything about this pandemic, and most of the world knows about the pandemic now. So they know about the pandemic, and they know anything about the sequencing, and they've been looking at this at all. And they hear a guy saying, well, the virus doesn't really exist because they haven't isolated it, which is false. There are plenty of people have isolated it. And when they go and they get these clinical samples and just do sequences, they could be from anything. And that's just nonsense. So any scientist doesn't even get in the conversation because they look at these guys and say, you guys are nuts. You know, this is like arguing whether the moon is made out of green cheese or not. You know, so
it's actually made out of cheddar.
Scientists aren't gonna, cheddar.
Cheddar
or green, whichever. Yeah, that's the debate. The scientists aren't going to get into the cheddar or green debate.
Nope. Nope.
When it comes to the moon and the cheese.
Well, what you said is that some of these arguments are predicated on 40-year-old science or thereabout, about proving it with an electron microscope or it can't exist.
Right, because they didn't have sequences 40 years ago. That's what they did. They went and they got the sample. They went and I mean, I've said this before. I'll repeat it. I used to isolate enough virus from cell lines that you could see the virus without any microscope. You could see the virus with your naked eye.
That's an astonishing replication feat. That's really amazing.
And the way it's done, is you basically, when you grow the cells are making the virus. The virus goes out in the media. It's used to grow the cell. You just pour off the media. You spin down the virus in a centrifuge that can spin really, really fast and generate a lot of G's and take a little particle like a virus and jam it down to the bottom of the centrifuge tube. And then you pour off the liquid. You've got the virus at the bottom. And then you layer it on top of a sucrose gradient that sets up a gradient of different densities. And then you put the virus on top and you spin it again very, very fast. And you pull that virus through that gradient. And when it gets to its density, which is 1.16 grams per milliliter, when it gets to its density, it stops going down and it keeps accumulating. And you end up with a band at this one position. They even have little beads that have the exact same density of 1.616 grams. And you can see the bead with your naked eye, and it goes down the tube until it gets to its density. And then you see a fuzzy ring at the exact same location as that bead is, and that is the virus. So you can see it without any microscope, with your naked eye. That little fuzzy band that's right where that little blue bead is the virus. And then you basically poke a hole in the bottom of the test tube and you let the sucrose drip out until the bead gets down near the bottom. Then you put the tube that you want to put the virus in, and it just drips out into the tube. And you isolate literally trillions of viral particles that you can see with your naked eye. And they do exist. But I did that back in the 70s. You don't need to do that anymore. You don't need enough virus that you can see. Mm-hmm. And you can generate a sequence that you can put in the machine that's going to go through and get each one of those 30,000 positions. You're not going to do them all at once. It's going to be 250 of them at a time. But it's going to give you this little piece and that little piece. And then software will take all the little pieces and put them together, and you'll end up with the sequence. And it's not hard to do, and that's why there's 92,000 of them. And the virus, a year ago, nobody knew it existed. It's a novel coronavirus. It's related to SARS-1, but it's nowhere near identical. And they didn't know it existed until they got those sequences. And as soon as they got those sequences, literally, within about 15 seconds, you knew what it was related to. I mean, that's what the technology is. When they release that sequence, all you had to do is you copy that sequence with a mouse. You just highlight it and hit copy, and then you drop that into the little blast box, this public software that anybody with an internet connection can use. It's free at the NCBI, and you go and you paste it into the box, you hit the button that says blast, and within about 10 seconds, you got the top 100 matches at GeneBank. Wow. And the top 100 matches were all SARS-CoV-1. So there was zero doubt that the new virus that was from Wuhan was most closely related to the SARS coronavirus that caused the outbreak 17 years ago. And you could run across that and find out exactly where it was different from the original one. But you knew, I knew in January that the virus was real and that the virus was very closely related to the one that caused the outbreak of SARS. And as soon as it was clear, there were 10,000 people in Wuhan that had this virus. It was clear that this was not an epidemic, that this was a pandemic of a virus that passed easily person to person. Right. And Trump still hasn't figured out that pandemics do not magically disappear. So this virus isn't going anywhere. And just to close it out, the latest update is that by December 1st, this is from the University of Washington, by December 1st, in the United States, their projection is that there will be 317,000 dead bodies in the United States. Right now, there's about 180,000. So there's going to be another 140,000 people that die between now and December 1st. And according to Trump, this is behind us. It's past tense. The pandemic's over, and he's already got in that convention they had in Charlotte. There's already four positives. It was inside. Nobody wore masks, and then they went and he did the White House yesterday, and nobody wore masks there, and there were 1,500 people. It was outside, but there will be positives there. And now he held another rally today in New Hampshire, and they actually said, you should wear masks. And you know what happened when they made that announcement? They got booed. The audience booed, and half of the audience refused to wear masks. Okay. Trump is going to be a traveling toxic waste dump from now until Election Day. He's going to do rally after rally and spread the virus around.
Typhoid Donald. All right.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Henry. Hey, have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend. Yeah.
All right.
See you next week. Okay. Take care.
All right. Dr. Henry Nyman, and I think that is quite clear now. You all have a good weekend. You know where you can find us at rents.com, and we'll be back with you Sunday night with our best. The network's running programs all the time, so you can drop in any time, just click and listen. And we'll be back live on Monday.